a taste of honey, tasting much sweeter than wine.
As part of its New York Living Legacy project, the Egg Performing Arts Center is exploring the 50th anniversary of the Beatles' arrival in New York with a number of performances and related events. Through February 15th, the celebration will include a series of multimedia events in area community centers and highlighted by two performances at the Egg, one on the 14th, All You Need Is Love, and the Fab Faux on February 15th. With a commitment to the accurate reproduction of the Beatles' repertoire, the Fab Faux treat the seminal music with unwavering respect and are known for their painstaking recreations of the songs, with an emphasis on the later works never performed live by the Beatles. Will Lee is you were a founder, correct, of Fab Faux?
Yes, Joe. It was kind of my brainstorm, and it had to do with meeting a couple of people who were like-minded, and the concept was to bring the records to the stage, which is basically what we do. We're not recreating any of the live performances as much. We kind of have our own take on how we present ourselves live, as people who have seen us up there already kind of know.
Yep. Will Lee, of course, is a Grammy Award winner and best known as bassist for over two decades on The Late Show with David Letterman and part of the Fab Faux, and it's a great pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I think of you, and I think of your love of this music and what you have done, and what it must be for you to play on that stage at the Ed Sullivan Theater night after night, where the Beatles came and took over this country 50 years ago.
Well, yes, I guess the word for it might be surreal. Because as a kid, this was the thing that changed my life and, you know, many others too, but actually was the defining moment of my, you know, what am I going to do for the rest of my life? It was that moment for me, and that moment dictated to me that here's what you're going to do for the rest of your life. You're going to do that. You're gonna play music
and
with people.
And was it the bass work? Was it singing? What was it? Or was it just being a part of music?
It was the girls.
Yeah, there you go.
Screaming.
At what point were you able to realize that of looking at it on TV as a kid to saying, okay, this is seriously what I'm going to do with my life?
Well, first of all, at that time, you know, we didn't have MTV, we didn't have music on TV 24 hours a day, and we didn't have close-ups of guys playing their instruments, showing you, you know, here is the move that you got to make to get the sound out of your instrument. And at the time, I was a drummer. So, you know, to see a very jolly Ringo Starr back there and, you know, with close-ups of what he was doing, you know, it was a total education. You know, and I'd had a set of drums as a kid, but I wasn't playing them because I wasn't really motivated in any particular direction to do anything with them until that moment, you know, when the Beatles showed us, you know, that great positivity, that great talent, that great excitement, and that great writing, you know, that we hadn't been exposed to.
You briefly mentioned this during the introduction, but when it comes to the creation of the Fab Faux, you wanted to create something that was to give people an idea of that experience of the music and ultimately a live experience for music that was not performed live by the Beatles.
Yes, I mean, there is so much magic in those tracks, in those records, which is exactly why we have, you know, it's not as much why we're not trying to look like the Beatles as much as is why we are, in fact, a five-piece band. Because in order to arrive at all those great sounds, you know, those extra keyboard parts, percussion parts, those great doubled vocals and stuff, it takes more than four people. And that's the thing that the Beatles, the so-called Beatles bands that are out there, have been doing for all these years, is trying to look so much like the Beatles that they don't really have all of that going on.
Talk a little bit about the purity that you're looking for, the note by note that you're concerned about.
Well, for us, you know, we are all basically studio musicians and stuff like that. So for us, the devil has always been in the details of the music. And, you know, the finer points of not only the spirit of what we're doing, but, you know, the actual instruments themselves, which is what you'll see a lot of on a Fab Four stage. You'll see more guitars than you probably have seen in any one given music store in your life. Because the idea for us is to try to replicate it in that exact way, which means bringing each instrument that was used on each record into each song that we go into.
When it comes to the actual selection of music, how set is that, and how much do you want to explore new things and work with new stuff?
New
meaning old stuff, but new things to you.
Well, believe it or not, I mean, as many years as we've been doing this, which is since 1998, there's still so much newness to be found in the tracks that we explore. And the thing about having a Beatles band is once you go and study the record and get your part down and do it as well as you can on a gig, the thing that happens is that you're allowed to hear what you missed the last time you listened to that recording. So every time we do something, we go back to and refer to the record and find actually still more new material, new something about the track, new sounds, new compression, maybe that note should move in this direction, you know, that kind of stuff. So it just keeps getting more and more perfected every time we get on stage and come back and refer to the music again. So it stays new for us, and we stay kind of scared, actually, all the time, which is really great for us and healthy and makes it a challenge.
So when someone like Paul McCartney comes on the show, or you're working with someone like Paul McCartney or Ringo Starr, is it soaking up and still watching what they do, or is it being able to ask them very specific questions? Are you given that opportunity?
Well, actually, the versions of the songs that they do when they play live, I have to say it's not as much of digging into every nuance of the records the way we have always attempted to do. And that kind of goes along with the way the Beatles performed their stuff when they got on stage and played their stuff that we have heard the record versions of, that when we go back and see them do the live version, it's so different. But the idea with Fab Four is to try to bring the records to the stage a lot more than they were doing. Until Paul and Ringo, especially until the point that they had their own Beatles cover bands, which are pretty damn good, I got to say, they weren't really going for that exact, you know, let's see how much we can bring the record to the stage. They were just kind of doing that night's performance of that song, if you know what I mean. It was a lot looser. And, of course, as the Beatles, you know, as successful as they were, they couldn't really pull off much due to the sound that was coming back at them, you know, all the screaming and stuff, which I'm sure had to lead to, you know, as talented as they were, had to lead to so much frustration, because those guys were saying things. They were progressing. They were growing. Mm. But this wasn't allowing them to really do that. You know, once they're out on the road, slogging it out with all the noise coming at them, you know, there had to be a huge level of frustration.
But I'm curious, given your opportunities to play with these musicians, and even recently with John and with Ringo and Paul, are you given an opportunity to explore that and to ask those questions?
Well, you know, you only have so much time with them. There's never going to be a sit down,
right?
You know, where you can really get into depth with that kind of stuff. Unless I was in one of those guys' bands, maybe that would even then it would probably be something that they may not want to get into too much.
But you can learn a lot from observation.
Sure, but you know, the thing that I learned the most from is just listening and going back and listening to the stuff that the magic that they created with all the effects and stuff in the studio.
You have, and correct me if I'm putting words in your mouth, but is it a dream gig to be able to do what you do, of having a set job where you know where you're going to be every day in the afternoon during the taping of that show?
Well, it's a dream to have a job.
Yeah.
I'll say, you know, for starters, as a musician, to have a steady gig and one that's gone on for 32 years at this point is pretty surreal in itself. But to actually go to the holy grail of the Ed Sullivan Theater and play, and the other last week was the week leading up to the 50th anniversary actual date of February 9th. We were taping shows, and we were doing all Beatles all the time on that stage, and it was right. So great. Every commercial bumper, every play on for a comedy bit, every top 10 thing, and every music act that came on the show was all Beatles songs on that stage. And that was, you know, that was as magic for me as it was for the guests coming on playing Beatles songs who hadn't done that before. I mean, every one of them had the same gaga kind of feeling when they were doing it.
And they even you even redid the marquee on Broadway.
Yes. Oh, well, that was really magic. I mean, I can't believe that they went through that much to honor that you know, that moment in history that changed so much.
Were you there for the interview that Dave did with?
Actually, I was out working that night.
Yeah.
But I think it was probably a closed session, if you will. Anyway.
Yeah. And as far as of watching someone and being a part of someone's career, like David Letterman, who is so much an innovator in comedy and late night comedy, and someone who has done things that we take for granted now, but we're certainly trailblazing 32 years ago.
Yes, the way the Beatles were. You know,
yeah.
It's hard to actually imagine going back and remembering what it was like before those people innovated in the way that they did. But, you know, Dave changed the course of comedy, and the Beatles certainly changed the course of not only music, but, you know, attitudes, fashion, to say the least. I might be wearing overalls right now if it wasn't for the Beatles, but I'm wearing striped pants instead.
Were you surprised in the early years of how much the band became a part of the show, and how much you were able to have an identity?
Yeah, we were lucky to, you know, we had as much. There wasn't as much going on, so we had a lot more presence. So we were able to really establish something, and through Paul Schaefer's, wisdom. And concept of doing the kind of music that we do play that now everybody else does, you know, there was something really going on there that was giving everybody a little wake-up call. Everybody was really excited about it. The college kids, you know, made it a cult thing in the beginning.
Well, the Fab Four will be at the Egg in Albany on February 15th, part of the Egg's 50th anniversary of the Beatles' arrival in New York. And you can find out more information by going to theegg.org, theegg.org, and also going to the Fab Four, FABFAUX.com. Will Lee, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Best of luck, and we look forward to having you here in Albany.
Thank you, Joe. Can't wait to get back up there again. We'll see you this weekend.
Indeed. Thank you very much. Again, Will Lee and the Fab Four at the Egg in Albany on February 15th, thefabfour.com and theegg.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.